Bacon. Are you ready, Alabama?
Oh, the band is out on the field!
The band is leaving the field.
And one time, at band camp?
Love the drum. Man, I do love my drum.
You say that's what she said one more time, I'm gonna pop you.
You're welcome to join the doghouse.
Oh, God, I'm so sorry I keep doing that.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
Be a dog.
The clock starts on my whistle.
How you doing?
It's time for the second half of the Tom Abraham Show. Here he is, the head of the household. Here's drum major Big Dog. It's Tom Abraham.
We strong.
You all may be taking the week off, right, this week, but I'm not.
Welcome back as we kick off the second half of the Tom Abraham Show. So glad that you guys are with us. You know, one of the reasons why I don't play fantasy football college style or why we haven't done it is just, I always just worry about what it's like when these games are played against teams that are FCS schools or even some of the group of five conference schools, and it just seems to knock all the numbers out of whack. You know, Jared Stidham, 32 of 37, you know, 364 yards against Mercer. Second most efficient passing game in the history of the SEC, behind only Tim Tebow's 31 of 35 for 482 against Cincinnati, you know, in 2009. It's like it almost should be a separate category. I don't know. It just drives me crazy. It's not the reason why I think Auburn will cover that 18.5 at Missouri, but I mean, you know, it just drives me nuts. Matt Scalise joins us now from AL.com and a Woody Anderson Ford VIP hotline. Matt, welcome in. How are you?
Doing good, Tom.
To think there ought to be like a separate category for these numbers. I mean, I think Auburn's going to get it together this weekend and get it done in a, you know, going away type fashion against Missouri, but not because Jared Stidham was 32 of 37 for 364 against Mercer.
No, I agree that we shouldn't take too much away from anything that happened in this Mercer game. I think definitely there's reason to be concerned about all the turnovers, but it's really only a reason. It's only a concern if that becomes a repetitive problem for Auburn. Mm-hmm. You know, I think should you feel good about the fact that Jarrett Stidham had a very efficient game throwing the ball? Yes, but only if he then is doing that against FBS caliber opponents. And there is a separation in talent. We actually were fortunate enough to be allowed into Mercer's program last week. We did a cool thing where James Crepia and one of our video team were allowed to be embedded with the program. We saw them preparing for Auburn. We saw them practicing. They seem to have a really good plan for Auburn, but even still, they would tell you, you know, this isn't a team that we can just match up with straight up. So the rules kind of go out the window when you have an FCS game against an SEC opponent. I think we're going to learn a little bit more about Auburn's offense this week, even though it is against a defense that I would say is in disarray. I think the Missouri defense, from a coaching standpoint, from a player standpoint, they don't have their act together. At least they haven't so far this season. But the players, talent-wise, are a lot more comparable to what Auburn's going to be seeing the rest of the season. So we're going to be able to learn a little bit more about Jarrett Stidham and what he's capable of against comparable talent.
And more about the offensive line, because even though this isn't a top-notch, you know, SEC offensive line or defensive line that they're facing, there is some talent over there, and they do create, you know, some problems if they have any modicum of pride, if they haven't totally quit, which I kind of feel like they have, on Barry Odom, you know, there could be some issues there. And I'm really interested to see what Auburn's going to do with the running game. I don't, you know, I felt like Cam Martin was in a witness protection program while Kerryon Johnson was out for the last couple of weeks. Now Kerryon Johnson's back, and they say you're going to see Cam Martin too. I guess I'm confused. I didn't know what happened. I mean, Cam Pettway had the last 55 carries by a running back for Auburn.
I would also like to put out an APB for Malik Miller, Kerryon's old teammate.
Right.
I really thought was a very talented back, and I thought we saw some good things from him before he got hurt last year. By all accounts, he's healthy right now, so I have no idea why he has not touched the ball so far this season. You know, Gus sort of said after the game last week that they're trying to prepare Cam Pettway for the grind of SEC play, I guess, by giving him an increased workload and working him back in. To me, I understand that argument, but also you're talking about a guy who has plantar fasciitis, which is an extremely painful condition, even if it's not something that necessarily keeps from being able to run the ball effectively. I think most people would tell you that that's a guy that you don't want to overwork. And Cam Pettway is a very sturdy back. He's powerful. I've been impressed with everything he's done on the field so far. Every running back has a shelf life, and every running back can be worn down over the course of a season and over the course of a career. And I think there are a lot of people questioning the workload that Gus has put on Cam Pettway so far this season.
Yeah, I would wonder about that as well. Plus, he's a certain type of runner. I don't want to say he's a one-trick pony, but he is that between-the-tackle hammer that looks so much better when they can threaten the perimeter as well. You know, and I thought that Cam Martin, Malik Miller a little bit, but Cam Martin, I thought, is a guy that had that wiggle and had that, you know, that speed maybe to expose things a little bit to the outside that would make things look even better for Cam Pettway inside. But I don't get the concept that, you know, we're gonna beat the hell out of our number one back now so that he's more ready later on in the season. Usually it's the other way around.
To me, the biggest thing for Auburn right now offensively is I don't know what their identity is. I understand that, you know, that they've played a very strong defense, that's primarily where a lot of our questions are coming from. But Jarrett Stidham, you know, even with the passing efficiency that he put up last week, whatever numbers he put up last week, I don't think anybody that watched that game, any Auburn fan certainly, was overly impressed with the offensive performance. And I think it's because even in a game where there were not very many incomplete passes thrown, there wasn't a lot of explosiveness. Auburn does not seem like a team that could score on any play right now. And that's how they felt in 2013 when things were really rolling. They were a team that had tons of explosive plays. They could blow you up at any moment. They don't feel that way right now. They don't feel like a dangerous offense the way that they have in Gus's best season. So, to me, I want to know what is their offensive identity? What is their bread and butter? What do they go to when they need to move the ball in a two-minute drill and get a score with limited time left? I don't know the answer to that. I don't think that they've really, you know, we saw them with the ball with a chance to tie the game against Clemson many, many times. And, of course, that Clemson defense is great, and Auburn just didn't seem to have a plan to move the ball and get it done in that game. The next time they're up against it like that, I'm very curious to see what do they go to? Who gets the touches when the pressure is on next time for Auburn?
Yeah, and, you know, and the pressure next time for Auburn could be looming, you know, just in another week where they'll get Mississippi State at home, and that becomes the most intriguing game. I understand that CBS and why CBS is in Nashville for Alabama and Vanderbilt, but, man, you know, that Mississippi State-Georgia game is going to be very fascinating, and then that sets up the next trip where Mississippi State will head to Auburn. What a triumvirate of games that would be if they get over on LSU and Georgia, and then they head to Auburn. Holy mackerels. I mean, they really got something going on there. But if they lose to Georgia, then the LSU thing looks like a blip where they just happen to play perfect and LSU was out of their mind.
You know, win or lose, to me, I just want to see how Mississippi State looks in that game. I want to see if they are keeping a pace from what we saw last week. And I don't expect them to blow up on anybody else like they did on FSU. I think LSU went into that game completely unprepared, completely underestimating their opponent. They played undisciplined football. I don't think they were ready for that game. I don't I don't think Mississippi State's going to go around the SEC blowing everybody out like that, but I do think I want to see that they're still able to do some of the things they did successfully in that LSU game. I don't think it's going to look the finished result. I don't think it's going to look like that LSU game very often for Mississippi State. But if they can continue to do with Nick Fitzgerald what they did against LSU, just in terms of downfield passing, a powerful run game that uses the quarterback's legs a lot, I think they'll be a very difficult out for a lot of teams, including Alabama and certainly for Auburn. I think you're right, Tom. That Auburn Mississippi State game right now is looming, and Auburn needs to figure some things out this week against Missouri before that Mississippi State game comes, because I think we've gone from coming into this season talking about LSU, Georgia, and Alabama as the games that Gus would be judged upon this season. That Mississippi State game has probably been added to that list at this point.
Yeah, and as it has for Alabama. You know, we had a buddy of mine that works with the SEC on CBS yesterday, and he was talking about the fact that Alabama and Vanderbilt game, you know, that'll be the first of Alabama's games on CBS. There's a five-game limit. And usually the Tennessee game is there, LSU is there, the Iron Bowl is there, but now you got to look at that Mississippi State game, November 11th in Starkville. I mean, that, you know, they may be on five times. I mean, it almost looks like, you know, down the stretch you may see it four of the last five games for Alabama on the SEC or on CBS because of the nature of those games, especially if State keeps winning. That could be the biggest hurdle they got.
I think Alabama will definitely be on TV five times unless something goes horribly awry, because Alabama's by far the biggest national draw in the SEC, and mm-hmm. people want to watch anytime they can anywhere in the country to see the number one team and see if they might lose. So they're going to get their Alabama games in, and I think this Vanderbilt game was I don't know if it was some contractual thing where they have to do a game at Vanderbilt once every so many years, but you know, I think it was an early opportunity for them to get Alabama on the air, and I think this game certainly could be interesting. Vanderbilt defense has looked very impressive so far this year. I think it's been against talent that didn't pose anywhere close to as much of a threat as Alabama's offense does. But it will be a good test for Alabama in a lot of ways. I think this is a team that, so far, their offensive output has been pretty impressive. They are not always consistent. I think this offensive line, I think Nick Saban would like to see this offensive line look a little more dominant, especially in the run game. And I think he would like to see Jalen Hurts continue to get more comfortable spreading the ball around like he did last week. I think that was a big step forward for Jalen Hurts to start spreading the ball around to more of that receiving core. And obviously he's going to have some defensive guys that haven't really played since that opener that are being worked back to the lineup this week. So I know that I get the national love for Vanderbilt. I get the hype around the game right now because people want this story to happen. But I just don't think. I think if you look at the talent on the team, on the two teams, I think Vanderbilt just would have such a huge mountain to climb to stay competitive in this game.
And if there was any chance of Alabama going in there overlooking Vandy or having that same old Vandy thought in their mind, you know, Vanderbilt has blown that out of the water. They started chirping, you know, Alabama, you're next, right on the field, right after the game. And then there's a story in the Tennessee. And today, you know, is Derek Mason and Vanderbilt defense is better than Alabama Nick Saban defense. And, oh, my gosh, I mean, you know, linebackers, we want to prove to everybody we're the best defense that's going to be on the field. I mean, goodness gracious almighty. I mean, I just don't understand it in front of a national TV audience why they wouldn't want to kind of keep their mouth shut a little bit and just let it play out.
You know, I don't mind it. I say get the hype going. If Vanderbilt has any level of hype with its fan base and its students, play it up, you know, even if you're pretty sure you're going to lose. I mean, I don't think there's anything to be loss in getting people excited about a game, especially at Vanderbilt, a place where it's so difficult to get the fans really emotionally invested in the team. They all enter football season every year with kind of an automatic assumption that they're not going to be very good, And it would be great for there to be enthusiasm around Vanderbilt football, even if it's just for a week, at the level that it might be going into this game. I still think probably you're going to have a very hefty contingent of Alabama fans at this game. They always do this. They buy up Vanderbilt season ticket packages just for this one game. But, hey, maybe you'll actually – if Vanderbilt puts up a respectable show in this game, I think it's still a win for this program. They're doing good things, and the progress that that program has made over the last 10 years is really remarkable. A lot of people criticize some of the moves that Vanderbilt made as far as folding their athletic department into the rest of the school. You know, people said they didn't take football seriously enough. I think they're showing that they made some smart decisions for their school. They have to do things a little bit differently than the rest of the SEC, but I think what they're doing is working for them, and I think Vanderbilt is making very noticeable progress.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. I before the season, I predicted every game, and I had actually had them beating K-State, but I had them losing to Middle. That was a nice little win, against what can be a very explosive offense at Middle Tennessee. But this is the spot I have them getting in trouble where, I have them losing, of course, to Alabama. I have them losing at Florida, losing to Georgia at home, beating Ole Miss, losing to South Carolina at South Carolina. So this will be the spot. I had them as a 5-7 team. So which would not be a bowl game, except for their APR. We'll probably get them in a bowl game anyway. But it'll be very interesting because after James Franklin left there, it looked like they went right back into the crapper. They were as bad as you could be those first 2 years after Franklin left there. And I was stunned that Derek Mason survived. But he does have them playing very good defense now. But, it's a little bit of a different animal that's coming to town this week.
And they have an offensive identity. I don't think their offense is going to blow people away very often, but they know who they are, and they stick with it. And that's going to win you some games. And, look, you mentioned that string of games. Look, Georgia's doing some good things so far this season. I don't know that I feel like the SEC East is just an insurmountable task for Vanderbilt. I'm not saying win the division, but there's a lot of winnable games. Florida does not look like they're a impossible task for anybody right now. And in fact, I'm not totally sure that I'm going to pick them to beat Kentucky this weekend. I think Tennessee certainly looks vulnerable. And by the time they play Vanderbilt, who knows what's even the condition of the coaching staff at that point. Georgia looks like they're doing some nice things, but I'm not really sure if they've been tested, and we don't know who the quarterback's going to be from week to week right now. So I think the SEC East is definitely a place filled with opportunities for Vanderbilt to get bowl eligible this season. It's just going to depend on whether their defense can hold up over the course of the whole season, because as good as they look right now, we know that depth is always going to be an issue for Vanderbilt. It's not going to be at the same place as the rest of the league has. So I think if they hold up, if they stay healthy, and if they're able to have a few games where their offensive identity, matches up well with who they're playing, I think they absolutely can overperform their expectations this year.
That's what's great about this time of year. Now we're going to start to separate the wheat from the chaff, right? And they're starting to get a feel for who is real and who isn't. I think the wrong team is favored in Kentucky, to be honest with you. I think Kentucky should be a 2 or 3 point favorite in that game. But if they can't beat this Florida team, then it's going to be same old, same old. They'll lose to Florida for 31 years in a row, and then they'll lose to Tennessee again. But if they beat Florida, they might beat Tennessee, and maybe they are part of this conversation for the first time. Maybe there's that glass ceiling that they kind of break through. We'll see. And then, I'm with you on Georgia. I'm not sure, but I think Georgia's pretty good. But that Tennessee or that Mississippi State game against LSU, I think has everybody just kind of like startled for a minute. And we want to see more Mississippi State now to see exactly what they got.
Yeah, it's great that we get back-to-back big tests against very, very talented teams for Mississippi State, because it's an opportunity to show whether they're legit or not. And again, to me, that game told me a lot more about LSU than it did Mississippi State. There's no question Mississippi State's a good team. You can't do that to anybody if you're not a well-put-together team and a well-coached team. But to me, it spoke much more to the lack of organization and the lack of discipline at the LSU program right now. And honestly, it looks hauntingly familiar to what we saw at Ole Miss under Ed Orgeron. I have believed from the beginning that was not a good hire. I believe it's playing out to be that way so far. And Darius Geis not available this weekend for LSU's game against Syracuse. Syracuse is not a crazy good team, but they're an explosive offensive team. And if LSU can't keep pace, they could be in line for another embarrassing loss this weekend.
Well, if that were to happen, that Orgeron won't last the year. I mean, you know, it'll be the end of the year. That job will be open along with the other ones that we fully expect to be open. The one that I don't think is going to be open is the Arkansas job. But the $15 million buyout, I think, is just too rich there. And I think that regardless of what happens, I think Brett Bielema can survive even one, you know, one 4 or 5-win season if it happens that way. You know, the question's going to be coming, you know, later in the year. The question will be, what's a better job, A&M or UT? You know, if UT is, in fact, going to open up, we know that Missouri will open up, but it looks like that Ole Miss will probably be open. I don't think Matt Luke's going to keep that gig, but they're in a different level than A&M and UT, and I think that's going to be the interesting mix. And a guest earlier in the week said that Nick Saban will be the deciding factor on that. If you don't want to go butt heads with Nick Saban, you can't take the A&M job. I think A&M's a better job than Tennessee, to be honest with you.
You still got to play Alabama every year if you're at Tennessee. I mean, yeah, I know you can win your division, but it's not like all of a sudden you don't have to deal with Nick Saban anymore if you're at Tennessee. You still have to play him every year. So I think A&M is a better job because there's more money for one thing, but I think your recruiting base is better. To me, Tennessee is always going to face a serious issue when it comes to recruiting. They're a great program. They have a great tradition and a great fan base, lots of resources, but there is not a natural talent base in Tennessee. You have to recruit out of state to be successful at Tennessee, and that inherently makes it a more difficult job than being at a Texas A&M, where you can basically recruit from within your state borders for your entire class if you want to. I think the Tennessee job can be a great job for a coach who has an understanding of how to recruit nationally and how to build a national recruiting presence. But there's not a lot of coaches that have that. It has to be somebody who has probably on day one a strong national reputation. That means you have to swing for the fences if you're Tennessee. And that's there's no guarantee you're going to get the guy that can do that for you. So
yeah, but you
I
know,
think the odds of success for a coaching hire at Texas A&M are higher than they are at Tennessee.
Yeah, I would agree, and I would agree facilities, even though Tennessee's got nice facilities too. I would agree with money. I would agree with the state of Texas, and I wouldn't be worried. I wouldn't be not taking a job because you're in the SEC West with Nick Saban. I mean, my God, the guy's not going to be there forever. I still think I still think he gets to the end of this contract. He's 70, and that's it. So it's, you know, it's a three, four-year problem. But, you know, look, Phil Fulmer always had top classes at Tennessee. He recruited very well at Tennessee National.
He did.
Recruiting.
It took him a long time, Tom. He had to build that prowess up. I mean, he built connections all over the country.
But they've had great classes the last few years. Butch Jones has had great classes. The guy is just an awful game day coach, and he's an awful developer of the talent that he gets. They've had good enough classes to be a winning program, I mean, a top winning program in the last 3-4 years. The guy just can't develop the talent, and he's an awful decision maker on game day. I mean, yeah, I think you can win there. It's just a matter of getting the right guy, and they're getting so far removed now from when they were good. Yeah, you got kids now are in the 4th, 5th grade. These kids that are now being recruited were in the 4th, 5th grade the last time Tennessee was relevant. I mean, they're just never any good, and what's going to really hurt them.
Yeah, I do think they've recruited well in spots. I think. To me, they remind me a little bit of Auburn as far as their recruiting has been, where they have a few superstar standouts in every class, and that's enough to get you a top 10 recruiting class. It's very, very impressive, and there's something to show off on signing day, but the depth isn't there. And when you go down the class in the bottom half of it, that's what separates the national powerhouse from the schools that recruit maybe a handful of big names and don't put as much effort into the rest of the class. To me, Tennessee's depth has been an issue. We've seen it the last couple of years when they can't absorb an injury the way that a lot of other programs can. So I think that's been a part of the problem for Tennessee, is just recruiting, not necessarily getting big-name players to come to your school. Tennessee's been able to do that, but it's top to bottom. You know, I think they have some great offensive skill position players, but maybe not as strong up front. for Tennessee. They on defense, you know, they'll have a couple of standout guys that get drafted high every year, but it's not across the board. And I think that talent differential shows up when they play teams like Alabama. So I don't know what the right hire is at any of these schools. I think that, frankly, the pool of coaching talent in college football to me right now doesn't seem very strong. I would be very worried if I was an AD and I felt like I needed to make a home run hire in 2017, because I look around and I don't know that there's that many options for me that seem very attractive. I don't know. Right. I don't know who the home runs are right now. And I think it'll be very interesting to see how that influences some of these decisions too.
That's a good point. Matt Scalise has been our guest. AL.com is where you find him. Matt, I appreciate you as always, man. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, Tom.
We'll get a break. When we come back, Russ Mitchell is scheduled next, senior SEC writer for College Football News. We'll do that right after this. It's the Tom Abraham Show. 730-1039, yep. Happy birthday to Eagles band member Don Felder. It's his birthday today, so the Eagles get into our Throwback Thursday musical wheel. So it's always good. Any excuse we got to get the Eagles into the show, is we're going to take advantage of it. All right, I'm just going to be honest with you. We're going to take advantage of it. All right, joining us now, lead college football writer for SEC, football writer for College Football News, our friend Russ Mitchell. Russ, welcome back. How are you, man?
I'm at land right now, kicking the tires and lighting the fires as much as a football guy can do at Legoland.
What are you doing at Legoland, man?
Trying to be a dad, man.
It's okay.
Trying to squeeze in being a dad in the middle of college football season.
Yeah, I hear that. No, that's a good job by you. There's nothing wrong with that. Dennis Dodd just hit the Twitter window with Nebraska news today. Trev Alberts for AD, who then brings the entire weight of Husker Nation to bear in getting Dan Mullen. That's it, man. Dan Mullen's everywhere. He's taking every job in the country now. What do you think?
How about the fact that last year around this time, the Mississippi State faithful were calling for Dan Mullen to be fired?
Which was the second time that happened. Yeah.
At the time, I was thinking, wait, isn't this the cat who, like, 2 years ago had you ranked number one in America, and you're Mississippi State, and you're thinking you're going to fire the guy? Every kid in Mississippi should be named Dan.
Well, they're all named Hugh now. The last 3 years have been being named Hugh, so not
yeah,
all
they're
of,
getting
you know,
their name. Those birth certificates are being scratched, buddy.
Return those bad boys up. You know, they're in this stretch now. They destroy LSU at home. They go to Georgia this week, and then they go to Auburn. Holy mackerels. I mean, you know, it's got everybody rethink. In your mind, was that a bigger reflection on the mess that is LSU, or is that a reflection on just how good Nick Fitzgerald and Dan Mullen are?
Well, it's more the former than the latter. Although, you know, your listeners were prepared for that game. Mm-hmm. We talked about it last week.
You called
everybody
it.
That was listening to your show was ready for Mississippi State to embarrass. Now, the difference between losing or being embarrassed and getting just blown out to the worst loss in 100 years was lack of discipline. This LSU team has no discipline. They lead the third in the nation in penalties, and 20 of their 30 penalties have come from upperclassmen. So it's not rookies that are making these mistakes. And that falls on the coaches. And I know the coaches are working on it, but they can't seem to get these kids to play disciplined football. And when you add in some, you know, some weakness on the line defensively, some inefficiencies on the offensive line, that's why you saw what you did. But give State all the credit they're due. Their defense is fantastic. Simmons at nose tackle is maybe the best nose tackle in the SEC. The ends play aggressively. So impressive at offensive line. Nick Fitzgerald looks calm and collected, running down aggressions, knowing when to run, knowing when to throw, and they might have the best running back in the conference.
Who do you like better, Fitzgerald or Hurts?
Oh, Fitzgerald. But that's only because Fitzgerald, he's a bit older, a bit bigger. I mean, clearly he's not fast. And let me be clear. I said it right away, but it's a little bit narrower than that. I think Hurts is doing well and he's improving. But the difference between Fitzgerald this year and Fitzgerald last year, I mean, Fitzgerald looks, I mean, he looked like, I'm not going to say throwing the ball, but in terms of his poise, he looked like Kurt Warner, getting the ball out really quickly. Yeah. He knew exactly where to throw, and then he knew exactly what progression order to follow. Smooth, knew when to run, didn't look flustered at all, didn't look too excited. Very, very impressed with Fitzgerald.
And that's the thing. That's one of the best things about Hurts. You know, when you talk about Hurts, usually it has to do with leadership and his cool and calmness. And when he, you know, when he's running and poise. Yeah, great word, poise. Fitzgerald, clearly a better NFL prospect than Nick Fitzgerald. I mean, clearly the better NFL prospect. I think going away. I always like to think about it. What if they switch spots? You know, does Jalen Hurts beat LSU in that spot? Can he be the quarterback at MSU? And if Nick Fitzgerald was at Alabama, he's probably the leading candidate for the Heisman Trophy.
Well,
right?
It does help to play for Alabama.
Right. Yeah, I would think. Russ Mitchell with us. We're talking about coaching jobs already because, you know, people are writing about it, and there's assumption that Matt Luke won't keep the job at Ole Miss, and probably the Missouri job is going to open up. That team is just looks like they've just absolutely quit. Then there's Kevin Sumlin in Texas A&M and Butch Jones at UT. Maybe a little bit different level job. If those two jobs, I'm going to ask you the same question I've asked everybody this week, college football guys. Which of those two jobs is more attractive to you? If those two jobs were opened up, A&M or UT, and you're a coach that's got to decide you're being offered both places.
It depends. Am I the best recruiter in college football? Or am I an average recruiter like Brett Bielema? Because if I'm the best recruiter in college football, I want the Tennessee job. But if I'm not the best recruiter, then I want A&M because there's a lot more talent to pick from in the state of Texas and Louisiana.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, our last guest said that, you know, Tennessee, it's just so difficult to recruit. And you know, look, Butch Jones has had some good recruiting classes there. He just can't coach a lick on game day. I mean, I'm just going to say it right now. Dude can't coach a lick on game day. Doesn't make adjustments. Doesn't do, you know, he does seem to bring in some good classes. And in our text window, a Vols fan sent the text that said, if Coach Staben were recruiting were coaching the talent at Tennessee, they'd be in the same situation that Alabama is, or maybe even better. They just have the wrong coach. Unfortunately, there's not many Coach Sabins. That's true.
That's factually inaccurate.
What? I mean, that there's not many Coach Sabins?
You need to look no further than his first year at Alabama. You know, I mean.
In two years, he'd have that team contending. In 2 years, yeah. Tennessee would be a contender under Nick Saban, just like Alabama.
He had like 49 kids in his first recruiting class. I don't know how many it was. 68 kids in the first class. In the second class, he had like 38 kids. I mean, he really quickly brought in his own kids, first of all. Second of all, Nick's not the greatest game day coach. You know, I mean, he's a very good game day coach. Besides, he gets a bit arrogant like Belichick. But, you know, I mean, he's a good game day coach. He's way better than Butch. But what makes Nick Nick is he's the greatest recruiter in the history of college sports. And he's a good an elite practice coach. And, if you get the best kids and you practice them up, you could be an average coach and he's better than average and have great seasons.
I think the key is player development. I mean, I know he gets great talent, but a lot of these people who make these determinations about 4 or 5-star guys, they follow what the coaches do. Some of them don't know if the ball's blown up or stuffed, but if you're being recruited by Alabama, you must be a 5. There was a kid in California, a 3-star offensive lineman that got offered by Alabama, and the next day he was a 4-star. And I'm like, what happened? What changed? It was the summertime, you know, but it changes that Alabama offered him. I think it's player development and game plan preparation. You're right. I don't think game day, but he's kind of like John Calipari in a way that they're so well prepared and the plan is so good that all they do is go out and execute. They execute their plan and he out coaches people during the week better than anybody else.
I think that's why everybody talks about how good he is when he's got like weeks and weeks to prepare. I actually think the deviation between him and other coaches decreases when both coaches have a lot of time to prepare. It's when you only have 6 days to prepare. Because Nick has done such a great job of getting everybody, you know, at such an elite level in that preparation that, you know, when there's only 6 days, I put Saban on top of everybody. One last thing on the recruiting, you know, it's just such a crapshoot. Don't pay that much attention to all those numbers, you know. I mean, there's so much fallacy in all that. Nick's a great scout. He gets the best kids to fit his thing, and then he coaches them up. And well, he's the best in the business at that. So then, you know, since college football, you can win and pick first, so to speak. You know, he just keeps winning.
Yeah. Well, you need to, on one of your many trips in the off season, you need to take Phil Savage's book with you and read about, you know, because Phil being with all his experience as an NFL scout, and read about the way that whole program was developed for scouting when Saban and Belichick were together originally in Cleveland. And then how they and why at Alabama there is this pattern that they use, and they really use a pattern, and you notice it. I mean, you've watched it now for 10 years. All the linemen look the same. All the running backs look the same. The quarterbacks used to look the same. Now they're going to look like Jalen Hurts. They go out and find guys that are clones of the last guy. The left guard always looks like Andre Smith. It's all the same guy.
But Nick's had guys in his program that have come out as coaches, and they try to replicate that.
They can't do
it. And they don't have the same results. So you got to give Nick credit for the second half of that, which you just did, for the second half of that, which is the development of the player once they get in.
Do we need – I took Brett Bielema off of the SEC carousel hot seat because of the $15 million buyout. I don't care what he does. There ain't nobody there that's going to pay $15 million to buy him out. But this is could Ed Orgeron in 1 year coach himself onto that? Is that job liable to open up?
$12 million buyout.
How Orgeron?
That guy got a $12 million buyout everybody knew he had no other job offers, and he would have chewed glass to coach LSU since he's a Louisiana kid. And what happened with him, you know, basically washing out at LSU as a player. You know, to offer him a $12 million buyout was ridiculous. But I think Aleva is going to get canned before the end of the year, and that could put – I will just say this. If LSU continues to play – I had them 3-5 before the season in conference play, and everybody laughed at me, and I just said, just wait. And if they go 3-5 or worse, then, yeah, maybe they'll pass the hat around. They might raise 12. Let me just add something. I don't think Bielema goes, you're right, not the buyout, but if you know the politics with Jeff Long and the whole Bobby Petrino mess, I don't think he's got the stomach to fire Bielema, and expectations aren't that high there. And I really hope they don't fire Odom. I mean, look at Mason, right? He needed a few years to build up his program. I know Missouri's a mess, but you got to give him like 2 or 3 years to build it up. And now look, we're talking about Vandy.
Yeah, well, depending on how bad it gets there. All right, before I let you go back to Legoland, the two big ones, the two close ones, the two intriguing ones that really this week, Bulldogs on Bulldogs in Athens. Give me your pick because you've been pretty good on these games lately. And Kentucky and Florida, does Kentucky break the 30-year itch? It's been since Reagan that they won that game against Florida. Does it happen here? Because I happen to think the wrong team is favored in that game.
So, A, State doesn't need any points to beat Georgia in Sanford Stadium. All right? They're an excellent team. Play the money line. You know, I say never wager on children because they'll always take your soul.
Yeah.
But, Michigan, Georgia held Notre Dame, and everyone says, oh, look, Notre Dame's done really well running the ball against other programs. Notre Dame hasn't played anybody. It's like LSU talking about how well they did against BYU and Chattanooga. So what Georgia did against Notre Dame, don't put too much stock into that. And I'm telling you, this Georgia team is stacked. This Mississippi State team is stacked. They're playing 20 guys on defense. They're rotating in. Their ends play well. It's not just, and then on offense, they're blocking. They had the best offensive line performance of all of college football last week. And I like Fitzgerald. I like State on the road. And you know what? Florida, if you watch that game against Tennessee, I watched it twice. Florida had two good drives. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, they had two good drives. Then they had the 70-yard run, but the kid didn't finish. And that's just one play. And they had the Hail Mary. I'm not counting those. They basically had two good drives in that game. That's not enough. You know, you can't guarantee a victory if your offense is that inept. So, yeah, I think Kentucky's playing really well on defensively. You know, remember, they turned the, if they can just not have interceptions, return for touchdown. I like the way Snell is playing. If you haven't had a chance to watch Benny Snell, he's really impressive. Well, tune on the game just to watch him. I like Kentucky at home to get off the snide.
All right, so there you go. It's the worm turning a little bit maybe in the SEC East. All right, appreciate you. Go back to Legoland. Build something with your kid, will you?
Hey, one last thing real quickly. We've talked about it this month. September is CMT Awareness Month.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
My family and I found out that we have this in our family, CMT. It's in the MS ALS family. And there's no treatment and there's no cure, except that I heard today that there could be an announcement coming down the pipe very soon. Some really, really exciting news. And if it turns out to work, then that could have impact for anybody with neuropathy, so diabetic or whatever. But
really,
really exciting CMT news coming down the pipe. So first of all, it's one out of every 25 people. So you should know the symptoms of it. If you go to my Twitter, there's a link, talks about my family, and I thank you for your time, and let everybody have a good football weekend.
Well, you just piqued my interest on the neuropathy thing, because I'm 20 years a type 2 diabetic, and my feet are like on needles, pins and needles at night, and that's something I fight all the time with the neuropathy. So now all of a sudden I'm much more interested in hearing about this news.
I'll probably be able to talk about it for sure, hopefully by the end of the month. But if not, then by the middle of October.
All right, man. I appreciate you. Have fun there at the Legoland.
All right. Take care. Bye.
All right. Thanks. Russ Mitchell. All right. Let's get a break. We'll come back with an update next, right here on 730-1039. Yep. Right, welcome back, Tom Abraham Show. T-Mac, I don't know, do we have time? Can you just give us a couple of the highlights here? Give us a little something here at the top of the hour before we get out.
I'm not going to throw you any music because your music will start any second, but I will tell you that the Mets expect manager Terry Collins to retire following this season. That broke just a few minutes ago. And Aaron Hernandez's fiance is suing the NFL and the Patriots amid his CTE diagnosis. He was diagnosed with stage 3 CTE, which is typically seen in deceased players with a median age of 67. She is seeking $20 million.
I thought it was being filed on behalf of his surviving child or something like that. So it's actually the fiance?
That's what I'm reading here. Yeah. This fiance files the report.
There you go. The NFL's fault he was a murderer. Crazy. All right, we'll come back with open lines at the top of the hour, and I promise I'll go to them. 866-485-9867. If you were on hold before and we didn't get to you, jump on a line now, and we'll get you in at the top. Right here on 730-1039. Yeah.